how damaging narcissists can really be. If you have or have had a narcissist in your family, then you also know how distressing their presence really is. If you've dealt with a narcissistic ex, whether you got married to them or not, you might also be aware of the way they treat their families. If you had a narcissistic parent, you probably saw that they were not capable of giving you love and care as you needed to grow up healthy and secure. So my guess is that if you do or you did have a toxic family member, you're already well aware of the fact that your average narcissist isn't really capable of being kind to their family. And in so many cases, they will even be worse to certain family members for various reasons. See, there's something weird that happens when you've got a narcissist in the family. Sort of a different kind of family structure evolves, one that is way outside of what most people would consider the spectrum of normal, healthy families. I call it toxic family structure. What that means is that in most cases, a family with a narcissist will involve a certain cast of players. This will include, of course, the narcissist or the toxic person the family revolves around, the enabler or the other parent who willingly or unwillingly supports the narcissist, the golden child who is the one that gets all the positive attention and often lives with extreme pressure from both parents who want them to succeed or be perfect, as well as the siblings who feel jealous or slighted by this attention that is so opposite of the attention they get. You've then got the scapegoat, you know, the problem child or the one everyone blames for everything, and the lost child, the invisible one who doesn't get in much trouble or who is largely ignored because the golden child is getting so much attention and the scapegoat is getting so much crap. Narcissists treat their family members terribly, and I'm going to share with you several reasons as to why they do this. Number one, a family member is always scapegoated by the narcissist. As you know, narcissists don't treat their family members well at all, and if they do have a favorite, it's never for legitimate reasons. They see this person as an endless source of supply. Even their favorite family member is used and taken advantage of in cruel ways. However, with that being said, there is always a family member who is scapegoated by the narcissist. This often happens when we have a narcissistic parent involved. There's one child that's their favorite, that's the golden child, and the other one who's a scapegoat. They won't hesitate to blame the scapegoated child for anything and everything, and this kid always ends up dealing with abuse. Also known as the black sheep, the scapegoat is the person in the toxic family structure who will be blamed for everything that goes wrong for everyone who's a member of the family or group. The black sheep is usually considered the outcast, like the bad kid, or a straight-up disgrace to the family. A scapegoat might also be empathic, strong-willed. They might easily internalize blame. They are emotionally reactive, highly sensitive sometimes. They are very protective or even overprotective of friends and strangers, and they tend to be the caregiver in the family. They're the one who's most likely going to question everything, including authority, which of course adds to their pain in the family, and then they always seem to be different in some way from the rest of the family. But the more favored child, the golden child, is always going to be terrified to let that narcissistic parent down because they might end up with the same type of abuse, and it could well happen, and it does. They are often interchangeable, these roles. Now this brings me to number two. Narcissists don't hesitate to blame their family members for things that are going wrong, no matter what. If a narcissist runs into a problem, they're definitely going to blame the scapegoated family member for that problem, even if it had nothing to do with them. And they could also lash out at other family members, but the scapegoated one would take the brunt of it. For example, let's just say that the narcissist got into a car accident. Well, they might blame the fact that yesterday they asked the scapegoated child to make sure the tires on the car were aired up properly and that didn't happen. So now, as far as the narcissist is concerned, the accident becomes the fault of the scapegoated child. And in some cases, they may even go so far as to try to make that kid pay for the accident. It's a little ridiculous. And of course, the narcissist will have no problem lashing out at other family members, but the scapegoated one will likely take the brunt of it. Narcissists will deflect, blame shift, and refuse to take responsibility for anything. It's just the nature of the beast, so to speak. That brings me to number three, narcissists don't treat family members with any respect. Narcissistic family members will speak rudely and in any manner they choose to their family members at any given moment, which undoubtedly means it will lack respect. They can appear charming, generous, and kind to people outside of the family who they're trying to impress so that they gain something from them, which is, of course, praise and attention and recognition. For a narcissist, it's always about appearances. So they want praise and recognition. And if these people ever spoke to the narcissist's family members, well, they would not believe how horribly they're treated by this person who is so charming and kind. That brings me to number four. The narcissist will not hesitate to push through the boundaries their family members put up. Now, you already know that narcissists do not treat their families even remotely kindly, definitely not with respect. You know that they're going to speak to them in unkind and disrespectful ways, and that means they will also push through any boundaries their family members put up. For instance, if one family member demands privacy while they're on the phone, the narcissist will absolutely ignore their request and, in fact, intentionally barge into the room the family member's taking the call. If they need to get something, or even if they don't, they will step on anyone. And sometimes just because you set the boundary, they'll try to cross it. The point is, they will step on anyone, which definitely includes their family members and anyone else close to them, in order to meet their wants and their needs. They do not care how you feel, and you can tell that exactly because of the way that they treat you. That brings me to number 5, you cannot trust your toxic family member. While the narcissist in your family will require absolute loyalty and confidentiality from you, well, you can't expect the same from them. You just won't get it. There are several reasons you can't trust your narcissistic family member. First one is that you have to deal with regular smear campaigns. If you were to go against them for some reason, or you don't do something they want, they will absolutely go out of their way to ruin your reputation. They will share private information about you. They will tell everyone on social media that, you know, you're on your period or whatever. They'll tell anyone anything they want without concern for your well-being. In some cases, they even go so far as to try to make you lose your job. Bottom line is, you can't trust a narcissistic family member in any way, as they most definitely have no concerns with spreading rumors about you. Definitely don't share any secrets with them, because you cannot confide in one of these people ever. Even if you didn't let them down in any way and they don't have plans to conduct a smear campaign, guess what? They're still going to tell your secrets without even thinking about it, especially if they might get a little bit of supply when they do that. You have to remember, there's no integrity there. Narcissists are master liars, and so they won't be truthful about anything unless it actually suits them to do so in the moment, and sometimes they lie just for the sake of it. That's why you should pretty much always assume that anything a narcissist tells you is questionable at the very least. You could not consistently expect honesty from anyone who might be a narcissist. From here on out, just please be very careful anytime you're dealing with a narcissist in your family. They are bound to hurt you in one way or another, and no matter what they tell you, no matter what they say, no matter how much they swear it's all about family and everything else, don't believe them, because they will. I promise you, I know from personal experience. The truth is that even if a narcissist swears up and down that they have your best interest at heart, they absolutely have no idea what that even means. I'm going to attach a section of a previous video for you right now, but stick with me and I'll be right back to talk to you afterward. Take a look. Do you think it's a coincidence that a lot of people who were raised by narcissists end up with narcissists? Do you find it interesting that sometimes people who end up with narcissists don't even notice they were raised by narcissists until they end up with a narcissist? One of the things I hear most often from my clients when we're talking about narcissistic abuse in toxic relationships is that whether they knew it before or they just realized it during our session, about 90% of them have at least one narcissistic parent or parent-type person in their lives growing up. So why is this? Why does this happen? As individuals, we are raised by who we're raised by. We experience all different things in our lives, right? We have little bits of information coming from our teachers, our friends, our parents, our siblings, everyone in the world around us. Not just the people, but also the situations we're dealing with. If we were raised in poverty, that's going to affect the way we think. If we were raised spoiled rotten and we never needed for a thing in the world, well, that's going to affect the way we think. If our parents were hippies, if our parents were lazy, if they were possessive or controlling, all of those things are going to become part of who we are. As we grow up, we develop the ability and, in fact, the right, and I think the responsibility, to choose who we want to be. But before we become aware, before we wake up and we know that, we are quite literally, and even sometimes after we wake up and know that, we are quite literally the sum of our experiences. When you look at it from that perspective, we sort of, without even recognizing it, have a certain blueprint for ourselves, that we become exactly what we are sort of raised to be. Now, when we have a narcissistic parent in that mix, it really throws us off. So if we're being honest, part of the reason that we end up with narcissists is because we are people pleasers. And when we have been raised by a narcissist, if we don't become a narcissist, we tend to become the opposite of that, a people pleaser. Whether or not they're openly abusive, our narcissistic parents taught us that their needs, their desires, their wants, their standards were more important than our own, and we were required to somehow follow their rules. And if we didn't follow the rules and do what they wanted us to do, well, then we were inherently bad or unacceptable or, as always, not good enough. We, as empaths, sometimes we would end up becoming caregivers of our parents, where we, instead of getting the love that they needed to give to us or should have given to us, we would watch them and make sure they were okay, and we would, you know, take care of them, sort of almost like an extra parent. We would blame ourselves. We were consistently blaming ourselves, and if our father was anxious and stressed out and yelled at the whole family, it must be our fault somehow. If our parents got divorced, sometimes we would blame ourselves for that, because it was easier for us to imagine that it must somehow be our fault, and that we could try to do something to fix ourselves. And quite honestly, in some situations, our parents outright told us everything was our fault. Regardless of what your situation was, chances are you became a people pleaser, and that you believed you were not good enough, and that you also sort of were chronically blaming yourself for every single thing that went wrong in your life and your family's life. And in your desire to be loved as an individual person, you were also always trying to figure out exactly what you could do to make your parent love you. So maybe you thought, oh, if I was quieter, if I got better grades, if I took care of the dishes, if I did all the things I needed to do, if I did all the things that this person wants me to do, maybe I'll be good enough. Maybe they'll finally love me. When that never happened, you just were persistently looking for love. And whether you admitted it to yourself or not, it was a thing. As empaths, as survivors of this type of abuse, we very often blame ourselves for everything that has gone wrong in our lives, and we look for ways to make ourselves better, which in many ways seems to be the only thing that makes sense to us, because our parents teach us that they're perfect, or that they're near infallible, or if they are fallible, then it's our fault somehow. And maybe it just has more to do with the fact that we need to maintain hope. We need to believe that things are going to get better, and so if we can stay focused on how we can fix ourselves or what we could be doing better, maybe it's a little bit of how we survive. With that being said, I think it's important to talk about one more major quality that happens to kids who are raised by narcissists, and that is insecure attachment. So first, I think it's important to define secure attachment, and that is our level of comfort with being attached to other people and trusting that that attachment is safe and okay for us. Dealing with having been abused or neglected or ignored, or dealing with, you know, an emotionally absent parent or a parent who didn't take care of us in some way, very often leaves us kind of flapping in the wind in our parent-child relationship. So when we go and we think about, as adults, getting into relationships with new people, other people, we are insecurely attached. We don't trust that attachment. So a couple of different things can happen. Either we can become the sort of people who refuse to connect to anyone and who just absolutely don't attach to people at all, and who just kind of a lone wolf type of person, or we can go the other direction where we get someone, we attach to them, and we're like, nope, I'm not letting go of you. I'm holding on to you forever and ever and ever. This can actually go really, really far in the wrong direction if you're not careful. But one of those two things is happening. Either we're going to become avoidant of any sort of personal emotional connection, we're going to refuse to attach, that's called avoidant attachment, or we're going to be so excessively upset, nervous, anxious about it, that we're going to do the anxious attachment thing, where we're going to just constantly be chasing love, chasing love, chasing love. One of my favorite movies was called Practical Magic, and these two sisters, they lost their parents. They were raised by these two aunts. And in the movie, they're watching their two aunts from the stairs, you know, do some magic spell on some lady who's desperate to get this man back. And one of the sisters goes, I hope I never fall in love. She can't even imagine the horribleness of that moment. Why anybody would want to feel like that? Because this woman was feeling very desperate to get this man who wasn't available to her. And the other sister goes, oh, I can't wait to fall in love. See, so one sister was doing the avoidant, I don't ever want to be with somebody thing, and the other one was like, oh my gosh, I'm chasing love. That thing happens to us. So as we grow, as we move forward, as we seek new relationships, this becomes a problem for us. Whether you go with the avoidant attachment or you go with the anxious attachment, chances are it's not going to serve you well in relationships. I think you can kind of see where this is going, right? So if you want to change your life, if you want to stop feeling like you're dependent or like you're not good enough, you have to start with self-love. One of the most important things we must remember on every single level is, regardless of how you grew up, regardless of what your parents told you, regardless of what the narcissist told you, regardless of any of that stuff, here is the big important thing I need you to hear from today. You define yourself, and it's time for you to know that. It took me a long time to learn that I could define myself. It took me a long time to recognize that not only was I good enough, not only was I smart enough, pretty enough, whatever enough, but I could choose to be whoever I wanted to be. It didn't matter if it wasn't acceptable to a narcissist. It didn't matter if my mother thought it was a bad idea, or my brother thought it was a bad idea, or anyone else in my life thought it was a bad idea. Only mattered that it made me happy and that it wasn't hurting anyone else in the world. You know, it's all about finding what works for you, what feels good to you, and what makes your soul feel alive, what makes your heart sing. The thing that gets you going in the morning or that could if you found that thing. It's all about loving yourself. Ultimately, it's all about loving yourself, and you don't even really, I didn't even really know what that was until I managed to do it. So I want you to start today, right now, by dropping all of that old junk, all of those old perceptions, those niggling voices in the back of your head that are telling you you're not good enough. That's not even you. That's somebody else's voice from the past echoing, all right? Let go of that stuff. Every time you hear yourself tell yourself I'm not good enough, you know, all of that, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not handsome enough, pretty enough, whatever, say no, that's not true. Psh, out, get out, out, and focus on what you really do want. Focus on what you deserve. Focus on loving yourself and treating yourself in the same way that you would treat someone you love, your child, your niece, your nephew, the kid you mentored in high school, whatever, whoever you would be kind to, treat yourself just like that. If you can imagine your child coming to you, let's say if you had a child, and your child saying to you, you know, hey, mom or dad, this is exactly what I'm going through, and they explain to you exactly what you're dealing with in this moment, what would you advise them? Let's say you're going through a relationship with a narcissist and they're mentally, verbally, and otherwise abusing you. What would you say if your child came to you and said, hey, I'm being treated this way by this person who I love? What would you say to your child? Would you tell them, oh, just stick it out and stay, you're not worth it? Of course not. You would tell them to get their stuff together and get out of there and do what they need to do because they deserve better. Listen, you deserve better too. Please don't forget, you deserve better. All right, now it's your turn. This brings me to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, do you have a narcissist in your family? What have your experiences been like and how have you chosen to deal with them? Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below and let's talk about it. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm going to leave for you right there and right there. And while you're here, hit the subscribe button right over there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.